Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.
And with us tonight we have Brian Saltis, Technical Evangelist at Kentico.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Why don't you give us a little bit of introduction about yourself, explain to the folks at home what a Technical Evangelist is, and maybe a little bit about Kentico.
Sure thing. Thanks, John. So I'm the Technical Evangelist at Kentico. And we're mostly known for a content management system because we've been around about 14 years. But we also have another service line that's called Headless CMS that you'll probably talk a little bit about later on this podcast. But personally, I have been a technical evangelist for about 2 years now. And when people ask me what I do, I use a lot of big words. And I try to talk to developers, or more so I try to get developers to talk to me, which tends to be a little bit harder than others. But I produce a lot of content. I actually blog once a week. I make technical webinars. I do a lot of presentations at user groups, conferences, and meetups around the world. And as a personal bit of background, I've actually been doing web development for going on 20 years now. I started with ASP and the joys of VBScript and kind of migrated my way into .NET. And I did mainly .NET development for about the last 7 to 8 years until I became an evangelist. In addition to that, I'm a huge super fan of Azure. I've actually worked with Azure before it was ever even released to the public. And I was on a lot of different beta programs with the Azure teams, including the SQL Azure Buddy program. And I tested Azure Web Apps before it was released. So I've been really involved in the Azure community as well. I've kind of parlayed that into a lot of speaking engagements, and really a lot of articles and content that I produce is both about Kentico and the content management system and developing things using that kind of architecture, but also hosting them and leveraging the cloud to kind of get, you know, these really robust, scalable enterprise applications.
All right. So another developer that's okay admitting that they've got a history in classic ASP.
I don't say it often. It really depends on the crowd. No one can throw tomatoes at me because I'm at my house. So it's probably a little bit safer than usual. So yeah.
So I don't know if you've had a chance to poke around the Six Figure Developer blog site, but you know, Clayton and I and any of our guest authors like to post and write and speak about professionalism and newer technologies and, you know, anything that might help a developer in their career. You know, what was the catalyst for getting you into a technical career, and what advice might you have for somebody just getting started?
That's actually a really interesting story. I started out being really interested in the medical career. I wanted to be a doctor, actually, a long time ago. And I unfortunately didn't have the life circumstances available to me to go to med school for 12 years. So I worked at a construction office, and I was like 19, and by far the youngest one there. And I was the only one that knew how to turn on the computer, let alone pull up the radar and amaze them with showing them radar. But bear in mind, this is back in like the mid-90s. And really, I found an interest in it, and I found it was something I really enjoyed. And it's really the problem solving. That's what I enjoy the most. I like doing things no one has done before. So for anyone getting interested in the field and wanting to kind of get their feet wet with it, you really have to decide how is it you want to think and live and really work and be. Because as a developer, it's nothing but problems all day. I mean, that's all you have are problems all day and challenges that you're trying to solve. And you have to really enjoy tackling those challenges and, you know, obviously enjoy fixing those challenges and, you know, meeting them, hopefully. But if that's not really something that's in your nature or something that's in, you know, your emotional state to be able to deal with a problem and try and fail and try and fail and try and fail until you finally succeed, that's probably like the biggest advice I would give anyone that's just starting out in the industry. Now, to take that forward a little bit more to maybe someone that's already interested in engineering or software development or databases, then it really just comes into, you know, you have to keep yourself current. And as you said, if you are also admitting that you started out with classic ASP, you know that it doesn't really matter what's new today. It all changes. And 2 years from now, it's a completely different paradigm, and there's different technologies, and there's innovation every day. And with that innovation comes tremendous capabilities, but also limitations that it introduces. And you have to be extraordinarily flexible in how you use technology, how you learn technology, and how you're open to new tech, you know, new things that are emerging, because it's always going to change. It's never going to stop. The rate of innovation is just extraordinary in the technical field, especially in the programming field. And you have to be able to keep up with that if you want to stay relevant and you want to still enjoy your job, because if you don't adapt and you don't evolve with the technology, you're going to get left behind. And it's a pretty uphill battle to try to get out of that to keep yourself current.
And you mentioned quite a bit about Azure in your introduction. I know you and I met at a speaking conference several months ago or a year ago now, where you were speaking on Azure. How did you get interested in Azure as a technology, and how do you utilize that?
A number of years ago, I worked for a software company, a custom software company, and they wanted to adopt Azure. And actually, with Kentico wanted to adopt Azure just as a platform that they support. And we actually, the three entities, the company I worked for, Kentico, and Microsoft, all kind of teamed up together to basically figure out how we can make Kentico run in Azure. And that was really my first, you know, steps into that realm. And I was the primary developer to try to figure that out. So here I am helping Kentico actually change their code to get it run natively in Azure. And in doing so, I'm learning a tremendous amount about Azure myself. Now, in the earlier parts of my career, I actually was a network admin / developer. So I've actually built Exchange servers. I've rebuilt an Exchange 5.5 server, as difficult as that is to say. And I've supported, you know, 40, 50 plus users on a network and set up VPNs and what have you. So naturally, knowing that infrastructure information, that networking knowledge, really helps me visualize things in Azure from a developer's perspective, because I understand what it is from a hardware standpoint, as well as a developer and a software standpoint. So it was a pretty natural fit for me to be kind of the primary developer to kind of bring Azure within to our organization and to understand how we can use it. From that time, once I started using it, I was absolutely hooked. And I absolutely love working with the platform. I love the innovation and the evolution that it has. And it just, they come out with so many features and so many capabilities that you can leverage throughout your entire organization, not even an application, your entire organization. And I love that, those capabilities that the cloud brings, and it makes it so easy to do. You can integrate so much easier with the cloud-based system than having to stand up your own server and configure everything on your own. I remember I recently had a conversation with another engineer, and he asked me how to take a SQL 2014 database and restore it to SQL 2008. And I scratched my head for a long time, and I'm like, holy cow, that's going to be really difficult to do. And you can, but you have to obviously script the tables and do a whole bunch of stuff. And I said, why don't you just stand up an Azure VM with SQL on it and restore the database there and get what you need out of it, and then shut it down, and it will cost us like $1 to run it, you know, for a couple hours. That's what I love about the cloud. That's what I love about Azure. It's not necessarily just a hosting platform. It's an entire suite of tools that you can use throughout your whole organization and as part of your entire development experience. That's really why I like it so much, and that's why I love integrating with it and using it as much as possible.
Okay, Brian, so you had mentioned working in Azure before Azure even existed. Was that on the Kentico Microsoft project, or was that before that?
Actually, no, it was actually part of the Kentico Microsoft, you know, meeting of the minds to kind of get it running there. But as in doing so, when Azure was first released, as you know, it was really just platform as a service as far as your hosting options. And then there was what was then called SQL Azure. And that was really the main nuts and bolts of the platform, in addition to the service bus and some other things on the back end. But primarily, we were interested in how are we going to, because Kentico itself is a .NET based CMS that runs on SQL Server. So naturally, the hosting option of platform as a service and cloud services and running the database in SQL Azure were the paramount of requirements that we had to address. So one of the first beta programs I was on was the SQL Azure Buddy program. And basically what I would do is, as part of our migration and my research into hosting Kentico inside of Microsoft's cloud, I was using SQL Azure, but it was still in its infancy. And there was a lot of things about it that they were still trying to fine tuning. There was this awesome Silverlight portal, which I still love because I've always loved Silverlight. There was some capabilities of it that they were still trying to iron out the kinks on. And so as part of the SQL Azure Buddy program, what I would do is, I think it was once every other week or possibly once a month, I would have a call with one of the lead program managers of SQL Azure. And he would ask me, what did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? These are the new features that are coming. And one of the most amazing things that this engineer ever told me was that he told me, it was because I made a comment about how much they're changing SQL Azure at the time and just how Azure innovates so quickly. And he said, at the time, the release cycle for SQL Server was like 18 months. That's how long it took them to produce a new version of SQL Server. And at the time, their release cycle for SQL Azure was 90 days. And that just astounded me, but it really aligned with what I was seeing and just this new features that were coming out so quickly, I could barely even test them before a new one was coming out after that. In addition to the SQL Azure Buddy program, I actually got access to what eventually evolved to be Azure Websites, which is now Azure App Services, which include web apps. But at the time, it was actually a standalone server that you could put on your own system that kind of ran its own web server inside of a web server in which you could host websites inside of it. So I did a lot of testing for Microsoft on that as well to kind of give them my feedback on how a company could leverage the Azure Websites model to basically become a reseller of Azure to where they're hosting their clients' software on Azure by way of Azure Web App, Websites, or what now became Azure Web App. So those two programs are probably the biggest ones I was involved in, at least in the initial period. Since that time, I've done a lot of work with Azure Search and Azure Functions. And so I have a lot of really close communication with the Azure Search program managers where they'll kind of give me some feedback on some upcoming features and capabilities that aren't even released in the API yet. But because they know how much I present on them, because I've presented on Azure Search for like 2 years now, they know that I am often talking to developers. And so I will show people some kind of unreleased features of Azure Search, and then I'll then report that back to the program managers and say, this is what people like, this is what people didn't like.
Okay, with Azure Search, John and I have a little side project that we're working on, and we're using Azure Search for that. But I feel like we're only using the very basic portion of it. He's exposed an API, and then with the JavaScript, I can call in and filter down a data set using just a query string. Is there more to it? What are some of the neat features in Azure Search that maybe we're not using?
So what I really love about Azure Search is how open and usable it is. Now, behind the scenes, it's all based on Lucene. So you have this very powerful search engine that's behind the scenes that can index and query your data in a lot of different ways. So basically, what Microsoft did is they put a REST API in front of that engine, and that's what you can call into. Now, personally, almost all my integration is actually done through the SDK because I tend to do almost everything in .NET, and I prefer C#, so I'm using the .NET SDK within even all my demo applications and even in my own personal site. But a good thing to know about the SDK is it somewhat lags behind the REST API because the SDK is just a wrapper for the REST API. So as they introduce new features into the REST API, they may not necessarily be present in the SDK until they release that. Now, as far as really cool features about it, I do a demonstration in a lot of the presentation I've done, and I go through the entire process of creating the search, creating the search service, then defining the index. And I spend a lot of time showing how to define the index because Azure Search, they support a lot of different OData data types for your data. So they can be a text, it can be a date, it can be a geography point, it can be all these different types of things. So how you define your indexes becomes very important because now no one's ever going to define their indexes the same way because it's really how you are going to search against your data. But you have a lot of control over that index and how you define it. And so when you make your different columns of your index, you can tell Azure Search, I want this to be the key. I want this to be searchable. I want this to be facetable. I want to be able to do suggestions on this particular field. So it has a lot of capabilities when you define your index. Before you even start searching against it, you have all these kind of possibilities. Then when you get to the point of loading your index, then you're basically just using, you know, you can do batch uploads, you can do merge, you can do new, you can delete. And so it has all these different capabilities about how you're putting the data in there, which become really important on how often you're updating your index. Are you just adding new records into it? Are you updating existing records? This all becomes really important on as to the interaction, the API calls that you make when you push your data into your index from your data source, wherever it is. And then lastly, it comes into the actual fun part, which is searching. So of course, you can do very basic searches against your data, and it's going to use the standard Lucene scoring to try to figure out the value that you searched for appeared in X number of columns, an X number of times. So it's kind of do this default scoring. But you can do really cool things like your own scoring profiles. So if you have multiple columns, you can tell it for this search, rank it if it finds it in this column higher than if it finds it in this column. And then for the next user, they might be the opposite one. An example I give is, you know, something like a shoe store or something that sells, you know, obviously shoes online. You could search by brand, you could search by color, you could search by type, you could search by size. Using different scoring profiles, you can manipulate how that data is returned from Azure Search and present the user with much more usable information and what they really expect. In addition to the scoring profiles, which I believe is probably one of the most powerful aspects of it, is you can do things like facets. So you can get faceted data back if you want. So again, like say for a clothing store or something, I can have facets for, only show me all the ones, you know, how many records for the men's line, how many records for the women's line. And you can kind of break down your search results. And really, what all this is doing, it's manipulating how the data is returned from the search service to your user. And you're doing that to provide the user information. If they're going to search for your site, you're trying to give them what they're looking for as quickly and efficiently as possible. Otherwise, they wouldn't be searching for it. They're trying to find something, and you're just trying to help them find it. So in addition to the scoring profiles and facets, you can do things like highlighting. So you can basically inject in your own formatting, and if it finds the value that they searched for in the field that you're returning, you can wrap the results in whatever formatting you give it in. And in my example, I like to use I just have a span with a particular CSS class on it. And when Azure Search gives me the results back, if it finds that inside of the text, it automatically injects that HTML into the response. I'm just displaying it on my page, and with the CSS, I can quickly highlight that and do some really unique experiences and some really cool aspects like that with Azure Search.
Okay, so with the highlighting that you mentioned, is the highlighting done, that is to say, the actual definition of the span that you were talking about wrapping your search results, is that definition done in your application, or is it done in Azure somewhere?
It's actually funny that you asked me that, because whenever I demo Azure Search, I show all these capabilities, but the highlighting is the visual one that people just love to see. And it's the simplest thing to implement. It's actually done on a per API call basis. So when you make a call to the REST API, whether that's done via query string and obviously doing a post, or if you're using the SDK, which I really like because there's some strongly typed classes in there, so I have a nice property that I can just populate, I actually define what the HTML pretext is and what the HTML posttext is. And whatever I put in those two properties, it will wrap those two values around the text if it finds it in the results it's sending back to me. So in my case, again, I use a span, and then I just control the look of it with a CSS class, because that's a really easy thing for me to update later without having to change anything. You could bold, you could not display, I guess, if you wanted to do that, convert it all to caps, wrap it in JavaScript, whatever it is you want to do, you actually define it on a per call basis within your application so that every call can be unique.
So you define the wrapper, and then the Azure Search service applies that wrapper in the results that it passes back to you, right?
Exactly. Whatever you put in the pre and whatever you put in the post values, Azure Search, if it finds the exact phrase or phrases that you searched for in the results that it's returning to you, it will just wrap that around it. Again, in my case, I'm using HTML, but you could wrap, you know, obviously trademark or something if it was like a person's name or something like that. You could actually inject your own text into the results if you wanted to. In my case, I'm injecting HTML because I want to control how that looks with that CSS class, but it's pretty cool capability. And it's what's really nice is when I when I implement Azure Search, I'm just getting the results back and displaying them on the page. I don't have to worry about the HTML. I don't have to worry about anything. Azure Search is injecting it in the results for me, so I don't have to do anything except for display, parse the JSON, and then just display the results that it has. So that's a really cool capability. It's a really small thing that takes seconds to implement, but it has tremendous usability, and it creates an experience for your users that helps them a lot. They can see exactly the value they searched for because you've highlighted it in the results that they're displayed for them. So it, again, it leads to a much better search experience.
Is there an opportunity for any kind of script injection with that? So like, say I wrap my search results in a script tag to execute on the page, and then when it comes back, that just gets displayed right on the page and executes some JavaScript or something?
Absolutely. So I've never tried to do that, but I can tell you that whatever you put in that highlight, post, and pre values, it's just going to inject that into the JSON that gets returned to you. Now, how you are parsing that JSON and displaying it becomes very important. So in my case, I know I'm getting HTML back, so I parse the JSON and I make sure I display it as HTML encoded values, I believe. But if you wanted a script tag, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't work, because Azure Search is just going to return whatever you told it to inject into the JSON that it's going to give back to you. So assuming that you put in a valid script tag and some, you know, obviously a JavaScript command or something inside of there, it's just going to display it on the page, however you're telling it to display the JSON. So I think it would probably work out just fine. I've never actually tried that myself, but you can bet I might be doing it after this podcast just so I can see.
There was one other thing that you mentioned that I didn't understand right off the bat, and so other people may not have either. You mentioned, I believe, facets for the search. What exactly would that be?
Sure. So facets are a logical categorization of your results. So think of if you go to a very big online retailer, like say Amazon or something, if you search for anything, you immediately start seeing it on the left. Like say you're going to search for a cell phone. You're going to see brands. You're going to see size. You're going to see, you know, carrier. These are all facets. So they're all facets so that you can start logically breaking down the results into these categories and sections so that you'll know exactly what it is you're looking for and be able to filter on top of them. Azure Search supports all that. But again, this is one of those capabilities that goes all the way back to the definition of the index. You can only get faceted results on a column or field of your index that you told Microsoft you wanted to be able to get facets on. So this is where obviously defining your indexes becomes really important as to how you want to use the data. But that's what those facets are. They allow you to drill down into your search results very easily. And in addition to that, you can do things like get the count. So let's say you were searching for, again, to my cell phone kind of example, you might know that you have 100 cell phones in your inventory and you have 5 different brands. You might put how many for each brand as a facet so that they can see, oh, you have, you know, 16 Apples, you have 22 Samsungs, or whatever have you. The facets allow you to drill down your search results and refine them so you can find exactly the categorization that you're looking for. That's what the facets are all about.
The score that you mentioned, it sounded a lot to me like that's something that would be interesting if you could plug into machine learning somehow. Can you do that? Or is it something that's pre-calculated in the search indexes?
So Azure Search, right out of the box, is, like I said, Lucene runs everything behind the scenes. And Lucene, by default, has a default scoring algorithm that it figures out. And I don't know what it is exactly, but again, it's more like, how often does the phrase you search for appear in X number of columns and in what format? That's the scoring you'll get off the bat. And you'll get, there's a score number that you get with that. And it will go up to, I think, 1.0. So you tend to get like 0.999-6284 or whatever, depending on how relevant the search results are. With the scoring profiles in Azure Search, you can start to manipulate how Azure Search is doing the scoring. So there's different types of scoring profiles that you can do. The very simplest one, and the one I tend to demonstrate, if only for brevity and just lack of time, is you can start weighting a specific column. So in my example, I have a bunch of Simpsons quotes because I've decided around the world, everyone loves Simpsons quotes. And in my search index, I have the author and I have the text. And so the default scoring profile will try to figure out if you search for a particular, you know, word, it will try to figure out if it's in the author or the text field and return what it thinks is the most relevant. But I have another scoring profile that says, show me the author results first. So basically, in that scoring profile, I've gone in and I've told it, if the result is found in the author field of my index, weight those as 5 points higher or something. And it really doesn't matter what that rating is. It's up to you to define your own point scale. And then I have another scoring profile that says if you find it in the author field or the text field, the other field, it will rate that one 5 points higher. So just by changing the scoring profile and then each request that gets sent to the Azure REST API, Azure Search will then figure out which scoring profile am I supposed to use. So now it starts changing the results based on the scoring profile that you wanted. And again, that's a very simple implementation of the scoring profiles. They can get much more complex. I have another example where every record in my index has a geographical point, a latitude and longitude. I pass it a specific latitude and longitude, and Azure Search can do a geolocation based off of that index to try to figure out all the results that are closest to me. So it uses geospatial location to try to figure out this is the point that I want to search against. These are the records and how close they are to me. So the scoring, it will start rating the closest ones to me as the highest. So something like a store locator, it becomes very relevant if you're trying to find the closest one to you. In addition to those, you actually can do custom functions for your scoring profiles. So you can pass in some other data, interpret it inside of your scoring profile, and then manipulate the scoring and the results that get returned to you based off of some algorithm or calculation that you define. And while I've never tried to do it, I would assume you would be able to tap into some other resource as part of that scoring profile calculation, like machine learning or a similar kind of service, to kind of manipulate those results to get the exact things that you're looking for. The scoring profiles, I believe, really behind the scenes are written in Node.js, I believe. So you can kind of script whatever you want to inside of that using the custom capabilities. And you can see how you can build out a really unique search experience if you can start changing how the results are. You know, if I pass my credentials into, or if I pass my demographics into the search results, it knows that I'm male. It might change the scoring based off of just because I'm male. It will start changing the results it gives me as opposed to a female user doing the same thing. You can do a lot of stuff with those scoring profiles. It's probably the most powerful aspect of Azure that I've seen so far.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was wondering, you know, whether you can have the machine learning or even possibly the Azure functions, you know, send off your, so in AI and machine learning, it'd be called the fitness test. So send off your search data to the fitness test to see how well it matches your search criteria.
Like I said, I haven't tried that personally. I would suspect that there's some possibilities there. However, I would be rather cautious against it because, bear in mind, that's an execution that's going to happen on every search that happens. So you could see some significant traffic if people are really hitting your site doing a lot of searching. So you may have to build in some other capabilities to maybe limit that to once per minute for a user or something like that. Capabilities. It's just something to think in mind. Like while you can offset that functionality to a third party like Azure Search, it's still something that has to be processed and executed, and that's going to have a performance hit along the line somewhere. So just something to keep in mind if someone was really thinking about implementing that. I would definitely keep that in the forefront of the things I thought about as I was looking to implement it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I really enjoy the power and the processing and the products available in the Azure cloud. You know, just thinking about Azure Search and the search capabilities and things like fuzzy search or whatever the correct term is for that. We had a case for that for a search algorithm, and that comes to mind that, well, we could spend 3 weeks an entire team on developing something, or give me 20 minutes and I could have something up and running in Azure.
Right. I mean, that's obviously one of the greatest benefits of that entire platform is the speed at which you can implement something. And you mentioned the fuzzy search. That's actually what it's called inside of Azure, is the fuzzy search. And that's really cool because it will try to interpret what it is it thinks you're talking about and then try to match it up. It might be the first letter and then some other characters, and that it will try to match that as best as I can. Now, as far as I know, you can't manipulate the fuzzy search. I think it's entirely dependent on Lucene and how it's doing the fuzzy search behind the scenes, but it is an option for you to do when you make your Azure search call. But in addition to the fuzzy search, actually, as of today, Azure Search got an update to support synonyms, which is a really cool feature that I've been demonstrating using the API because it hadn't been released yet for the past 6-12 months. And with synonyms, you can put in different phrases for something your users may be searching for and give them other results based on it. So a really good example of this is actually going back to my demo with these Simpsons quotes. I have all these different characters that have made these comments, and you may or may not know the right character that you want. So I actually made a synonym called the Hank Azaria synonym. And basically, whenever you type any of the characters that Hank Azaria, that he is the voice of, which is like Chief Wiggum and Homer, or actually Homer's Harry Shearer, but there's Ralph, Wiggum, there's all these different characters that Hank Azaria is the voice for. When you search for one of those, it gives you the results for the other ones because it matches it up with the synonym. So again, that's a new feature they just released that I've seen for a few months now. But again, what's really cool about that, and it sounds like they're just kind of putting in features, but if you go all the way back to what I said, search is about helping people find what they're looking for. And sometimes people know exactly what they're looking for and they put it in and you give them results. Sometimes they know the name of it, but they may not spell it right. So you put it in. If you do a fuzzy search, you still may be able to give them the results they're looking for. Sometimes they don't even know the name of it. They just know that it's something like that. And with something like synonyms and the synonym mapping that you can do on a particular field of your index, you can now give them results, even though they didn't even give you the right information. So that is a great experience for your user because they're not coming to your site just to play with your search. They're coming to your site to find something they're looking for. And with all these capabilities that Azure Search has, you're able to give them those results faster and more efficiently.
One of the other technologies that we might want to discuss was Azure Functions. I know that you've spent a lot of time researching and working with Azure Functions. For someone that's new to the term entirely or new to Azure Functions, what can you share with our audience?
Sure. Azure Functions are a pretty powerful capability of the Microsoft Cloud Platform in that sometimes you have a function or a method and you just need that one thing to run. You don't necessarily need to architect an entire solution around it because it only does that one thing. Or a better example is you may have a function or a method that needs to be available to a wide number of applications. And you don't necessarily want to duplicate or triplicate or whatever number comes higher than quadruplicate is. You don't want to basically duplicate that code across all these different applications. Using Azure Functions, you can host a single function on an Azure app service and then call that function or have it execute on a timer-based schedule. So basically think of it as an applicationless function that just runs, and you can call it however you need to do so. So that's what Azure Functions is in kind of a nutshell. Now, for the functions themselves, there's all kinds of functions. There's timer functions, there's HTTP triggers, there are triggers based off of the service bus, there are ones generic webhooks. You have all these different types of functions. I think there's 10 or 12 different types of functions. And in addition to that, you can have a function in, I think, 8 or 9 different languages. I tend to make mine in C# because otherwise it would take me a lot longer, but you can do F#. You can do PHP, you can do JavaScript, you can do Bash, you can do Batch. So basically, think of Azure Functions as a way for you to isolate a particular set of functionality and make it available to whatever you want it to be available to. That might be a single application, it might be a suite of applications. And using an Azure function, you can just call that when you need to. You're only going to pay for the processing that function takes up. So in my example, in the demos I've given, I have several different examples of using like a blob trigger so that when a new file gets uploaded to an Azure storage account, and in my demo example, I have like a very large image. Maybe you want to compress that image and archive it. You could certainly put that into your application to archive that image, pull it down, zip it up on your machine and then copy it up to Azure Storage or some other repository. But if it's, say, a gigabyte or 2 gigabyte image, that's going to be a lot of resources that you're going to ask of your web server to do. Plus, you have to build in the scheduling mechanism, and you have to build in the integration to wherever it is you want to store the archived image. Using Azure Functions, you can actually have a blob trigger that watches a specific storage account, and when a new file comes into there, it will execute your function. And in my demo, that's exactly what happens. As soon as I upload a new image into the blob storage account, the Azure function pulls it down local to the Azure app service where the function runs, not my web server, compresses it, and then uploads it into another Azure storage account. So all that functionality got offloaded onto Azure Functions, and it didn't affect my web server at all. It's an asynchronous process, and it's triggered automatically just by when a new blob gets uploaded into the storage account. So just that's a great example of how you can offload something and just kind of make it happen behind the scenes using Azure Functions without it ever affecting your application in any way. Another good example is one that I've actually implemented on my own site with Azure Search. And in my own site is actually powered by, I mentioned we have a new headless CMS, which essentially that's just a cloud-based content repository for managing my content, and we have an API in front of it. So I have a .NET Core site that uses our API to pull my content out and display it within my website. But I also really would like the ability to search against that, namely using Azure Search, so I get all these faceting and highlighting and scoring capabilities. So what I have is, I have an Azure function that uses our API, pulls my content from our headless CMS called Kentico Cloud, local to the Azure function server, then uses the Azure Search SDK to push it into my index, and that happens once a day. Now I have a search capability on my site where I hit the Azure Search directly and I get my results back, and my content doesn't change very often, so I can totally fine with a one-day tolerance of, you know, stale data. And using that Azure function, I didn't have to build the timer. I didn't have to build any of the other integration points. It all just happens behind the scenes, and I can just go on about it and get some great search experience on my site. So really, Azure Functions are opening up a brand new kind of world to developers by allowing you to basically extract a specific capability or functionality and make it globally available. And that it has so many possibilities, I can't even begin to name them all.
So it sounds like you're just describing a set of microservices then?
That's absolutely right. As part of kind of my evangelism for my company, we, like I said, we have this headless CMS, this new kind of cloud-based content repository, which in itself can be, you know, is its own microservice. And to kind of demonstrate this microservices architecture and methodology, I took my own site and I recreated it again using, I use a .NET Core MVC site, and I pull in all of my content by way of our API. So my content is now delivered by a microservice. I'm using my Azure Functions as a microservice to sync that data over to Azure Search. In addition to that, I'm using Application Insights on the back end of my website because it runs in Azure. So I'm using the Application Insights as a microservice to track how my web servers are doing and how my server is performing. I'm using Office 365 to send my mail. So when you go to my contact page and you send me an email, I integrate with the Office 365 API. So that's another microservice. And then lastly, I actually have a chatbot on my website. I really only implemented it so I could learn how to do a chatbot. But what I did with my chatbot as a microservice is I have an FAQ page on my website where I just have a bunch of questions about me, like what's my favorite team? And, you know, it's the Steelers, of course. And what's my favorite beer? Where do I live? Where do I work? Those kinds of things. I created a chat, a bot service inside of Azure, and I basically taught it, or I filled its knowledge base with my FAQ data. So using an iframe, actually, that's the simplest way to implement it. I have a chatbot on my FAQ page, and if you talk to it, it will talk back to you and it will answer questions. And most of the questions are going to be answered by my FAQ data. But again, it's along that microservices mentality of, I could have built my own bot, I guess, and had it read my FAQ data and then respond. But I'm using a microservice to offload that functionality to somewhere else. I'm using, you know, Azure Search and Azure Functions to get my entire search capability offloaded as a microservice somewhere else. So through piecing together all these smaller pieces, I have a funny way of doing it. It's like Voltron. And really, I'm going to test your audiences. If they know who Voltron is, they'll get the reference. If not, I'll just leave it there and they can kind of go search that, but it's really piecing together five or six different mini systems or mini services or solutions as one complete application. And in doing so, I actually save myself a tremendous amount of development because I don't have to build out a timer functioning for my function. I don't have to build out the repository for my content. I don't have to build out the bot service, you know, the bot capabilities for my chatbot. I'm piecing together all these different microservices as one larger unit. And it's a really nimble and, you know, streamlined application now. And it's a really good representation of what's kind of possible by piecing together all these different smaller, you know, services and offerings to have one kind of unique, complete solution.
I was always partial to Thundercats.
Thundercats are good too. They did join together. I guess if you really want to go way back, you could also say the Care Bears maybe were microservices because they all joined together as well. It really depends on how far down the early 80s Saturday morning cartoon rabbit hole you want to go.
Oh, we should probably keep it, you know, fresh for the younger developers and talk about Power Rangers.
Well, yeah, there's a reboot of Thundercats on Netflix.
There's also a reboot of Voltron on Netflix.
Sorry, I meant Voltron, but yes, there was one of Thundercats too.
I'm sorry, I'm a bit of a purist. I don't even recognize the reboots. I only deal with the classics.
The new Voltron's not bad though. You should check it out.
It's not great.
Have you gone back and watched the original?
It may not. Well, yeah, they don't hold up, but but the reboot's not great. It's not bad, but it's not great.
Okay, Brian. So before you mentioned that you were a custom software developer, what made you want to go and work at Kentico?
That's actually a really good question and one I get quite a bit. And what it really comes down to is my own kind of individual style and how I like to work. So I guess go all the way back to the very first question of some advice I gave to people. You really, if you can kind of figure out what it is you like to do, you can kind of shape your career around it. And while I've worked on projects at a custom software solution provider and then even a standalone product company years and years ago, I would actually get rather bored if I worked on things for a very long amount of time, like months or even years. I was much better at small bursts of innovation. Specifically, I really love the challenge of see if you can do this. And it's kind of a double-edged sword when you go into this POC frame set and, you know, mindset and how you kind of function and develop. Because if you're doing a proof of concept, chances are you're doing something that no one's even tried to do before, which is very exciting because I like to try to figure out. Actually, I'm determined to figure it out. And if I don't figure it out, I get really upset. I get really aggravated. Eventually, I will figure it out. But if no one's ever done it before, there's no one to ask. So it can be a difficult and challenging situation, but that POC kind of development model and doing these 2-3 weeks of innovation and making some really cool, unique, you know, solution was really what I like to do. And I had worked with Kentico for several years as a partner. So it's like 6-7 years I worked with them as a partner. And I knew basically almost everyone in the company and they knew me. They're actually based out of the Czech Republic. So I've been to Czech Republic a number of times, and I really got to know the company, and I really liked working with the platform. And I've used other content management systems before in the past of, you know, several of our competitors and of all different frameworks and varieties. And I really just liked Kentico because it was a .NET-based SQL server. And again, to go all the way back to the skeletons in my closet, I started out with ASP. And I basically have been a Microsoft developer for nearly 20 years. I've done other development too, but really I've mainly used Microsoft technologies, and that's really what I've kind of built a career around. Kentico being a .NET-based CMS, it kind of was a natural fit for me and one I really liked working with. So here I am working at this solution provider for 6-7 years with this platform that I really like working with, and I really enjoy working with the company. I like working with the people. I like implementing solutions with it. I like really coming up with new kind of exciting solutions with the platform. And they had an opportunity for a technical evangelist. And I kind of had an in with the company because I knew the entire company just about. And so I kind of talked with them and we figured out it was actually a really good alignment. I really enjoy talking to people and I like teaching them and I like showing them what's possible with a particular platform or a technology. That's one of the things I enjoy doing anything, which is fairly atypical for developers. I'm much more talkative than your typical developer. But in doing so, I really like to connect with people. And that's one of the biggest joys I have as a technical evangelist is connecting with other developers kind of opening their eyes and showing them what's possible. And because I already knew the platform at Kentico, I had such an extensive, you know, experience with it and with Azure and doing all these different implementations, it really was just a great fit for me to go work at the company. I basically get to do exactly what I want to do. I get to do proof of concepts. I get to talk to developers. I get to give presentations. I get to be on awesome podcasts like this one. And I get paid to do my dream job. And so it really was a no-brainer for me and one that I've been extraordinarily happy with. I've gotten to meet people around the world. I've gotten to go to some really cool places and present at some really unique conferences and meetups and user groups. I was just in Australia 2 weeks ago speaking at the Sydney Azure meetup, and that was actually my second time doing that. So really, me coming to Kentico was just the natural progression for me and my career. I never really had aspirations of being a development or, you know, programming manager over a large team of people. I really like kind of doing the one-off proof of concept. Let's see if I can make this work. And at this position at Kentico, I actually get to do that every day. And even if I'm not successful, I can make a blog about it and say, don't do this. I tried it. It doesn't work. And so either way, I actually win. And I basically get paid to do the job description I wrote. And it's a really great opportunity. And I'm really thankful that I was afforded it. And that's why I really try to evangelize and promote Kentico as best as I can within the community, because I really do believe in the company. And I believe in the products we make. And I really enjoy talking about them and showing people what's possible.
Now, you mentioned speaking and teaching and meetups and conferences. What's been your favorite aspect of pursuing those avenues of sharing knowledge? And what's been your favorite experience so far?
Well, as a technical evangelist, it's kind of a strange scenario. It's kind of an interesting role to be in, because everybody will consume information in different ways, and you'd never know what is the way you're going to break through to someone and provide them something they're really looking for. It can be a blog post. It can be a webinar. It can be a podcast. It can be a newsletter. It can be a presentation. It could be a meeting with them face to face. There's so many different avenues of how people consume information, especially in the tech space, because, you know, people aren't reading a magazine typically. They're going to be going to a website. They're going to be subscribing to a newsletter. They're going to be looking at an RSS feed. So as a technical evangelist, you have to produce content in a variety of different manners. And I really enjoy the variety that I do produce that in. I really like making blog posts. Actually, I've been at Kentico a little bit over 2 years, and I made a pact to myself. I just thought a technical evangelist should make a blog at least once a week. That's what I decided was an appropriate level. And I'm happy to say that I'm 2 years and 2+ months, I have never missed a week. And that's just a tremendous amount of content to produce. Now, it does become increasingly difficult to find topics to present on, but once I have a topic, actually, I found I can write very quickly. And I never really thought of myself as a writer or an author, but I can write a blog rather quickly because I really just speak from my own experience. And that's really what people seem to like the most. And that's probably my favorite aspect of the job, is not necessarily just telling you, this is how you do that. It's telling you, this is how I did it, and this was my experience. Sometimes it's the right way, sometimes it's not necessarily the most optimal way, but I really like that interaction and connection with developers on a personal level so that they learn who I am. They learn the things that I've done, they learned how I go about things, they learned what I've accomplished, what I was unsuccessful at, and them using that to solve their problems is one of the best aspects of this position and what I do as a technical evangelist every day. And I would say, as far as my favorite experiences, I do enjoy writing. I like webinars. I like the online stuff, but nothing can beat talking to someone face to face. I really enjoy presentations. I like giving presentations. I think I'm just a natural speaker, something I actually really enjoy and look forward to. But the things I enjoy the most are sitting over a beer and someone like asking me, Brian, how would you do this? And it's funny because I tell people all the time, it's not like I have all the answers about Kentico or about Azure. I mean, I have a lot of answers because I've done a lot with it, but I don't have every answer. And I, of course, have not implemented it in every scenario. And sometimes, you know, people will come ask you for a question, you know, an answer to some issue that they're having. And I found that even if you don't know the answer, if I can just tell them, well, I don't know how to do that, but this is where I would start looking. Sometimes that's all people want. They don't even know where to begin. And when you have those interpersonal connection with people and you kind of learn what their real issues are and you kind of help them find their solutions and kind of show them the path that you would take. And like I said, maybe that's showing them not the path to take. I don't know. But really, it's that interpersonal developer connection with the community that I probably love the most that tends to happen more at live events more than anything. And really, it tends to happen at the social event afterwards more than anything. That's probably what my favorite experiences are. And I, John, you can probably speak from experience. We talked quite a bit at a distillery at the Little Rock Tech Fest last year. And I really enjoyed those conversations more than anything. That's what I like the most.
Fantastic. And do you have any upcoming engagements?
I do. I have a number of kind of user groups that I'm looking to hit up, especially in the South Florida area. I'm hoping to hit the St. Petersburg meetup that I think I might have an in with the host on that one. I'm also going to try to look into the Orlando, maybe Jacksonville, Capital City user group over in Tallahassee. I live in Florida. I'm on the other Florida that's in the other time zone, but I do like to kind of make a circuit once or twice a year. And unfortunately, I didn't get to go to the South Florida CoCamp this year because I was unfortunately at another event, but I still would like to kind of hit that region because it's obviously the one I have the closest connection to because it's right in my backyard. So I think over the summer, that's where you're going to see me more than anything is probably kind of doing the user group circuit throughout the Florida Panhandle area and the rest of Florida in the Eastern time zone.
All right, Brian. Well, thanks so much. So where can folks find out more about Kentico?
Sure. Obviously, you can hit our main website at kentico.com. If you want to learn about our new headless CMS solution, it's kentico cloud.com. If you want to see a lot of my writing, we actually have a developer portal specific to Kentico EMS, which is obviously the content management system. That's at devnet.kentico.com. On there, you'll find all my once a week blogs that I've done for 2+ years. In addition to some forums. So really, I'm just telling you this information so that if you're working with Kentico or if you encounter Kentico in the future, I want you to reach out to me, brians@kentico.com. This is my job. My job is to kind of help you find the way. I don't always have the answer, but I'll do everything I can to kind of help you solve the problems that you may kind of come across. And I can definitely direct you as to where to find and learn more about the platform and to kind of see what it's capable of. So really, Kentico.com, KenticoCloud.com, DevNet.Kentico.com. Those are your best solutions.
And where can we go to play with your chatbot?
My chatbot, it's actually under SoltisWeb.com. It's on my FAQ page. I will warn you, I am hosting in the lowest Azure web app I can to get a custom domain. So if you just flood my server with a ton of traffic, I hopefully it will respond. Actually, it's actually driven by, like I said, Kentico Cloud. So we actually do a lot of caching. So it actually should be very responsive because the application itself does a very little data retrieval as people hit it. It will just start caching it. The chatbot, I don't know, but I will say it has a very unique name and you can ask it some kind of unique answers or questions and you might be surprised at the answers it gets. Its name is Botosaurus Rex. So that's the name of my chatbot and you can ask it questions and maybe not all the questions are in the FAQs. I'll just put it that way.
Fantastic. Any final thoughts, Brian?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank both you and Clayton for having me on. I think it's really great when people put together these podcasts and kind of bring in, you know, some great information to the communities. And this is a lot of information you would find if you went to my presentation or went to my blog. But if you're not familiar, there's so many capabilities of Azure and Kentico and Azure Functions and Azure Search. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience. So thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much, Brian Soltis, Technical Evangelist at Kentico. This has been the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I'm John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.
And we'll see you next time.